This episode of Talk of the Devils is sponsored once more by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit 1 million orders phase. Yep, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling ETH style turtleneck sweaters or blueprints for brand new stadiums, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to Talk of the Devils, you can sign up for our $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/reddevils, all in lowercase without any spaces. So go to shopify.com/reddevils to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/reddevils.
Hello, listener. I'm Carl Anker, and welcome to Talk of the Devils, the Manchester United podcast from The Athletic. Coming up, we're going to look on a disappointing defeat as Manchester United are beaten by PSG, which makes things a little tricky to qualify for the last 16 of Champions League. We're also going to discuss Edinson Cavani and a little bit in general about strikers at Manchester United. Joining me, as ever, is my strike partner from The Athletic, is Laurie Whitwell. He's here fresh from Old Trafford, probably still thawing out as it's getting quite chilly in the north. Laurie, how was that? How are you?
Yeah, fresh is the word, definitely. Keeps you awake being in that kind of temperatures. And my teeth were literally chattering on the way back to the car, which is might say something about my own ability to stay warm as much as the Manchester weather. But I really enjoyed being there watching that game. I know that United lost, so you know, that's the big takeaway from it. You know, it puts everything on a knife edge for that Leipzig game. It was in United's hands should they have got to that position from where they were, but I actually thought it was a really enjoyable game. You know, even the drama, even the kind of needle of it, you know, Neymar and McTominay's spat, the Fred situation, which obviously we'll get into, should he have been on the pitch at all, should Solskjaer have taken him off, but I kind of quite enjoyed all that drama, and there was chances at both ends. I thought United actually played pretty well for a large part of it, so yeah, a decent evening, albeit with the result that you know is disappointing and leaves things very much on the edge.
It does leave things on the edge. I will recommend to you and anyone listening, if your teeth are chattering when you're cold, get some silver lined gloves. Just helps keep you warm in places where you wouldn't be able to keep warm. But let's get into one of my favorite segments of this podcast, which is where in the world is Andy Mitten? He's the United We Stand editor and contributing writer to The Athletic. So Andy, where are you in the world?
Do you really want to know? There's not a lot happening, mate. If I look a year ago, I was coming back from Kazakhstan. I'd been in Seoul. I'd been in Japan. I was leading this exotic life as a travelling journalist. And today I've had two flights cancelled on me. But if you want to know how to get to Leipzig, I know the price of every flight. I know how long it's going to take by three different driving routes. I know the overnight trains out of there. I know you can get back via Frankfurt. I know all the quarantine rules for it, and I'm still probably not going to be able to go, because the bottom line is it's a 5-day quarantine for one game of football, and I don't think my daughter would appreciate me missing a birthday party to watch Leipzig. But it's become a big game, and I said last week, United have still got a real job to get out of this group, and that's been proved after the result against PSG.
That has been proved. We are going to get into that, listener, but don't forget, we are given the chance to subscribe to The Athletic for our best ever price. Yes, for just £1 a month for the next 12 months, you can subscribe to The Athletic and get some of the best sports writing on God's green earth. You can cancel this deal at any time, and you can also enjoy all of our podcasts advertisement free. This offer is going to run until the 4th of December, so that's Friday, so don't miss out. If you want to take advantage, go to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. That's theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod to pay just £1 a month for 12 months. This offer is for new subscribers only. But it gives you a chance to enjoy some of the best writing on Manchester United and beyond. Would be a decent way to give someone a Christmas gift. Right then, Manchester United 1, Paris Saint-Germain 3. I enjoyed that more than I should enjoy a defeat, Laurie. Is that okay to say?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, why did you enjoy it, Carl? Because I sort of had the same reaction, really.
There were at least three moments there in that game where I properly jumped out of my seat in that sort of good fan feeling. I was watching the game on BT Sport, and I saw Solskjaer mentioned how it was one of those games that you really wish fans were inside Old Trafford because it would have been rocking. And I know Andy talks about this a lot as well. So I think that would have been a game where there would have been a lot of, ooh!
So many moments. That was what I was actually doing. I was jotting down quite frequently the number of times I just felt, God, imagine if there was fans, you know, reacting to that. And also even at the end when, you know, needle would have dropped, when Neymar rolls the ball in for the third, you know, the whole the noise would have just, you know, been, you know, snuffed out in a second. And actually the subs benches were very loud. They certainly made the most of you know, there being no fans there in terms of their own reactions. Pogba was particularly vocal in the first half when he wanted a card showing for a player, and the analysts were sat just to the right of me, United analysts. So you know, they were giving it you know, a few decibels from their seats. You know, Rashford at one point in the second half when he was dribbling through, and they're shouting at him, shoot, shoot, and you know, he sort of delays a little bit and gets tackled. But yeah, it was one of those nights where you sort of felt, God, it would be great to, you know, we've said this a lot, haven't we, in terms of closed doors games. I don't want to harp on too much, but it was one of those games where you really did feel, God, it deserved a crowd, you know, the kind of occasion, but also the action on the pitch.
There was so much action on the pitch. There was Fred's maybe red card, two missed chances for Anthony Martial, Cavani hitting the crossbar, and then Paul Pogba reminding everyone that he still is, you know, an expensive football player. Andy, what are the highlights for you?
I thought it was an engrossing game, and I was watching it thinking, this is Champions League football. It's great to see Manchester United playing well against a team who were good enough to reach the final last year. It was full of incident, doing nearly a great goal from Cavani. I think Martial, the Parisian, should have scored against PSG. We'll talk about Fred. Paredes, what interested me about him was, I wish he would have been half as animated when I interviewed him in August in Lisbon as he was on the pitch, because it was like talking to a wall when I met him. And his name actually means wall in Spanish, if you want a little Spanish lesson as well. And you know, Fred was stupid. He was silly, and he was lucky not to go off. Your point about the fans, I woke up this morning and I tweeted it. I was just gutted, thinking, this is one of the massive, massive Champions League games at Old Trafford, where the whole city's buzzing for it. All the bars and restaurants are full in Manchester City Centre. It's big cold weather. The atmosphere's just building. Everyone's asking for spare tickets. The atmosphere would have been rocking. PSG fans are really, really loud. They travel really well. And obviously, there's none of that, but the game as a spectacle, I thought PSG battered United in that first 20 minutes, and United had a really good spell. I can take a lot from it, but as Laurie said, the main take is the defeat, and United are still top of that group. I would have accepted that when this group stage was drawn, but it's going to be very difficult going to Leipzig. A Leipzig team who've lost four games recently, and I watched a bit of their match against Istanbul tonight. They were all over the place. But United, no mistake, they've got to perform in Germany next week.
It was, I mean, we can talk about the Leipzig game quickly. They were 3-1 up, and then they needed a last-minute goal in the 92nd minute to win 4-3. So agent Raphael nearly got the job done there. In terms of Manchester United, Laurie, I think we've gone back and forth on this podcast, and Andy, you've talked as well about the need of that midfield pivot and how what McFred offers in these big games and why Solskjaer goes for it. So you saw it again, and it looked shaky in those first 10 minutes, but slowly it looked as if Fred was getting in there, and it slowly looked as if Scott McTominay wanted revenge for his contact lens. What did you make of the two midfield men there, Laurie?
Yeah, I think McTominay had a much better game than Fred. McTominay's actually very loud from the get-go, you know, before kickoff, you know, shouting for pressure on the ball from the players. The first thing Fred did was dallied on the ball too much and let Verratti nip in, and that kind of struck the tone really for his first half. He did do some good stuff, and Solskjaer spoke afterwards about that's why he kept him on, because he felt that his performance didn't deserve him to be hooked. I still feel even without the yellow, I don't think he did great work, and the yellow card that he got sent off for, yes, he got the ball, shouldn't have been a booking under Herrera, you know, we recognise that sort of shithousery from him, don't we? But then nevertheless, it was a heavy touch to a ball that was Man United's possession, and then he's had to stretch to kind of keep control of the ball, so he sort of brought that on himself. And yeah, I can, you know, Solskjaer goes with those two because they are diligent, they do what he asks them to do, albeit, you know, I don't think he asked him to Fred to shove his head into Paredes in a way that definitely would 99% of the time have warranted a red card from a referee. It was incredible how quickly he looked at the screen and said, "That's a yellow."
Did we get any confirmation there as to why it was only a yellow?
I don't know. I mean, did he just think it was, you know, it wasn't violent conduct? It was what's the lesser charge from that for a booking? You know, I guess that's all he thought, that it wasn't enough of a head movement to justify violent conduct. So it's a booking rather than a red. But yeah, I think every other referee watching that screen would have said red. I mean, you just think as soon as he's been sent over to that screen, I saw it live, you know, the ball was away, but you can see Fred move his head and instantly all the PSG players were around. And that's the thing, you know, that's the other sort of context of leaving him on in the second half. Those PSG players do not need any invitation to point out fouls that may or may not be yellow cards and pressure the referee. And the referee clearly, you know, you're not telling me that at half time he didn't have a bit of conversation about that, you know, Fred headbutt, you know, so to speak, and whether it should have been a red or not, and then the sort of tackle on Paredes that Paredes ends up getting booked for, that Fred sort of, you know, stood on his foot. I mean, I don't think that was a foul by Fred either, you know, it was a 50-50 and just one of those things. But, you know, you sense that all those things knitted together meant that the smart thing to do was just take Fred off, whatever you felt he was providing the team in that McFred combination, you know, which they do have good understanding, they do cover for each other, they do break up play really well, they've got lots of energy, which, you know, does unsettle PSG. You know, that's where United had their positive moments from, when they broke up play and then switched it quickly, transitioned quick, and that's what we've seen McTominay and Fred do, you know, away at City last season and various other games, PSG in particular, actually twice, you know, away in Paris they were the combination to do well. So I can see why Solskjaer went with it, but I just thought with Van der Beek, with Pogba, with Matic particularly on the bench, there was you know, ample ready-made options to just alleviate a pressure point that didn't need to be tested, didn't need to be a tight rope to walk, you know, it could be avoided. So, but listen, Solskjaer afterwards, he sort of held his hands up, he sort of said, yeah, listen, in hindsight, you know, maybe it was a mistake, my error, but he said that they did speak about it at half time, you know, just be careful, Fred, you know, in what you do. He thought he was careful up until, you know, that moment where he's sort of diving into Herrera. Disappointing really, from, and you sort of wonder whether that will mean that Solskjaer just weighs it up as a partnership for Leipzig. I don't know, it'd be interesting to see who he goes with away in Germany.
Andy, I want to get your thoughts here. This feels as if a decision, this Solskjaer keeping Fred on, feels like one of those decisions that you can almost see Solskjaer go, I'll roll the dice like a certain other Manchester United manager would do. What would you have done in that situation? As a, you know, I think quite a lot of armchair fans are going, you've got to take him off at half-time, you've got to take him off at half-time. Is there any merit to keeping him on?
I think, as Laurie said, he admitted he probably got that wrong, and it did seem the obvious thing to take him off, even if he'd played perfectly in the second half. Everyone's attention was on Fred after what had gone on in the first half. I do know that the coaches feel that there is a lack of depth in that position. So you might say, bring Matic on. I know that the feeling is that he can't cover the ground quick enough, mm-hmm. especially against a team as quick as PSG. And PSG were too quick for Fred and Scott McTominay at times. So I think Matic would have been a struggle there. They feel that they need more strength in that position. And there's been this midfield conundrum where we've talked about all the merits of playing different players, even playing Paul Pogba defensively, Donny van de Beek defensively. Doesn't feel like the manager's fully struck on one system which he feels would work for him in the biggest games. As Laurie said, I think Scott McTominay played well tonight. Fred, he's got his merits, he's having a decent season, but if you're going to say, is he in the same class as a top midfielder? I think he loses the ball too much. I think he's had a couple of stinkers, but he had a really poor game against Arsenal. And you just can't do what he did against Paredes. Maybe there's a little bit of the Brazil-Argentina rivalry sneaking in there. And we're viewing all this with hindsight now, and it seems so obvious in hindsight, but I think tactically, if Ollie was going to stick to that system, then I can see why he did keep Fred on, because he's probably got the best legs in that position. And I think 25 minutes before the end, I thought this is a really good game of football, but there was just that killer minute where they scored and Fred got sent off. And then against a team as good as PSG, who were really motivated. And I know that Ollie had watched them so closely. He felt that they played really poorly against Monaco. He'd been told that Thomas Tuchel had really gone off against his players. So there'd been a bit of an edge between the players and the manager. They felt that they had a point to prove, and they proved it. They were as impressive in parts of that game as they were at Old Trafford in February 19. It's weird that they've won both the games at Old Trafford and United have won both the games in Parc des Princes.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Shall we talk about the missed opportunities for Manchester United? Because there was definitely a 20-minute period where Marcus Rashford realised Neymar wasn't going to track back, and it looked as if the goals were on. Laurie, what happened?
Well, I actually sort of weirdly, it's an odd post-match press conference question, but I did ask Solskjaer, you know, technically, can you tell us how Martial missed that? I mean, we know that he put the ball over the bar, but, you know, what as a striker did he actually do wrong? And he just said, you know, didn't put his foot through it, you know, obviously head over the ball and what have you, follow through with it. And it's just, I think this is what Martial... This is how Martial lets himself down, because he is capable of incredible moment skill. You know, I mean, that pass to Bruno Fernandes in the first half, you know, was crying out for a first-time hit, or, you know, certainly something more than what Bruno ended up doing. Also, it was Martial that put through Cavani for that chip that ended up in his second chance, you know, after the Bruno flick. And I think with that second one, he had clearly got the first one in his mind, where he's looped it over the bar and he thinks, right, I'm just going to keep this one down. And then obviously by doing that, you know, he allows Marquinhos the opportunity to block it. So... You know, I suppose he had two ones there. You know, either one, you'd think if he gets one of those two, you're thinking, okay, fine, we can accept the other one. But both of them together just makes you feel that this was a big night for, you know, big players, and Martial did do good bits, but, you know, at the crucial end of it, you know, he's let himself down really, and that's just it's just the frustrating part. You want a killer there, don't you? And I think Martial has shown parts of that last season when he was given the number 9 shirt, but I think the reason why Cavani's, you know, been brought in and why Solskjaer still wants Erling Haaland, I mean, you look at the way Haaland takes his chances and it's ruthless, it's cold-blooded, and Martial perhaps doesn't quite have that edge to his game, you know, albeit, you know, he's now 24 and you know, we keep saying this, and that's not to dismiss him as a player for United. I think he's still, you know, extremely capable, was a, you know, real big part of that impressive front line that United had towards the end of last season. But you just kind of want a bit more from him. And I think, listen, if he scores that goal and it goes 2-1, United aren't losing that game, are they? I think they end up winning the game, and it's a glorious night. You know, I think Paris, at that moment, as you say, Neymar wasn't tracking back. The way that PSG had started the game had sort of frittered away. It had been more, you could sense they were becoming more strained. As Andy mentioned, they were really up for this game. The way they reacted at the end was, you know, raucous. It was rapturous. And I think that started to play on their minds at 1-1. And then you could feel them getting stretched and kind of trying quite hard. So if United had taken the lead in that period, then I do think PSG, we've seen it before, you know, might have crumbled.
That is true. The current group right now, Manchester United, top of the group, thanks to the goal difference. Thank you very much, Marcus Rashford, for that hat-trick against Leipzig at Old Trafford. PSG now into second, and RB Leipzig in third. It looks as if Istanbul Başakşehir will not be featuring in European competition in January. It's a shame. Andy, I want to you've talked about how much you know about how to get to Leipzig. We've talked a lot on this podcast about United's form at Old Trafford versus their form away from home. Is there anything from your research about Leipzig that makes you go, oh, actually, Man United probably have a good chance playing away from home here?
Well, they'll be missing the best defender after what happened tonight, and their recent form has not been as encouraging and as good. They've lost those four games, as I said, as it was when they came to Old Trafford. You've also got to think that United put five goals past Leipzig at Old Trafford. It'd be a monumental swing for them to turn that round and win convincingly. As you say, United have got the goal difference advantage, which means United are top of the group. They're going to be highly motivated. It wasn't a five-goal game at Old Trafford. I think that scoreline flattered United. They're going to come out and attack, but I think United are often better when teams do that. And United went strong on the attack tonight. I know that they felt that if they tried to play for a draw against PSG, they'd be punished for that. That was the thinking going into the game. You know, if you give Neymar, Mbappe, you give them 5 yards, they're going to completely punish you. 20 minutes in, I'm thinking this isn't really going to work because United could barely get the ball, but then they've had some really good times with it. You've got two important games now. You've got West Ham, who are in form. If United don't win at West Ham, or I mean, maybe a draw wouldn't be such a bad result, but United have been pretty terrible at West Ham in recent years. The doubters would just kick straight back in if you get in the second consecutive defeat. And then that game at Leipzig, it's a huge game. It's the Champions League. This is why teams try and finish in the top four, to get into the Champions League. And financially, I think to get into the knockout stage, it's another 10 million minimum. There might be fans in by the time the knockout stage comes around. And this is Manchester United. The status of the club should mean that they are in the knockout stages of the continent's Premier competition. I'm still favouring United to go through now. I do think PSG will win against Istanbul. But if United can't get a result in Leipzig, did it even deserve to go through if you're not winning more than the three matches in the group stage? One thing that will really cost will be that result in Istanbul. That was an absolute shocker. There's not really any excuse for that. I can understand losing at home to PSG because they're one of the best teams in the world, but that game in Istanbul, I really hope that doesn't come to cost Manchester United. But I think United are generally improving. There was four straight wins going into that game against PSG, and they need a draw. Don't remind me of the game in Wolfsburg when United crashed out a few years ago.
Ooh, the Nick Powell special.
not only is it known for Nick Powell, as a journalist, I'll never forget after that game, Nick Powell walking through the mix zone and just looking at people like myself, and I didn't know him, with utter disgust, like we were the scum of the earth. And I just thought, you absolute prat. You've not got a chance of making
prat,
it.
Prat, was it, Andy?
It was... If you want me to talk in Mancunian parlance, I wasn't quite diplomatic at the time. And I just thought, you've not got a chance. And I asked a few people who knew him, and one of them just said space cadet, as in he won't have been doing it on purpose. He's just like his head's just in the clouds. And he actually said he's a nice lad, and I know people who work with him at Wigan and they spoke really well of him. But yeah, that was a very famous substitute, Nick Powell coming on in Wolfsburg. Also remember in Wolfsburg that night, one of my mates was so drunk that he tried to tell me it was an indoor stadium as the game was going on. And I said, no, that's the sky. He went, it's not, it's the roof. I said, no, it's not, mate. It's the sky. I'm telling you now, we're not in an indoor stadium. So that's what I remember about Wolfsburg.
Speaking of players out of position, I don't know if you, did you notice we had Maguire as a striker for United tonight for the sort of the final, and obviously that's why he was, you know, frantically screeching back to slide in on Neymar for that sort of unfortunate third, but he was another really vocal one actually, Maguire, in terms of, you know, staying positive, you know, we're going to get this, you know, goal back, etc., etc. And also, Andy, I think he listens to the pod because he wasn't, when he's got that left back next to him, he doesn't say Alex, he says Talis, as by way of communicating with him. Yeah, so
but I did notice pick up. I did notice him go forward because he actually put a lovely header in to set up Paul Pogba.
He did.
That was a great shot.
Yeah, and just so, charging, running out of defence in the first instance in that move. I think he sensed there that United, if they were going to get back into it, they needed to sort of overload PSG in unexpected ways. And, you know, he sort of thought, listen, to heck with it, I'm just gonna go. And listen, it nearly worked, didn't it? So,
and another thing he did was he fronted up at the end of the game, which I know was an issue. He didn't do that after the Tottenham defeat, the 6-1, and he's Manchester United's captain. And maybe there was a little mix up there, but I think if you're the captain, you've got to face the media through thick and thin. And I think he's been he's had a far better month than he had in his first month of the season. And I think they'll learn a lot from a game like that, because PSG are used to playing far more top level Champions League games than Manchester United. It wasn't always so, but it is now, and it showed.
Mm. It was an impressive captain's performance from Maguire. Not only did he do all that stuff on the pitch, but he also had a little moment where he sort of separated Scott McTominay away from Neymar at half time, where things looked like they could have boiled over. I also want to mention, not only did Neymar score a really good goal for that third one from PSG, but he also, him shepherding PSG's players away from Fred after the headbutt, in air quote, incident, was a really, oh yeah, moment where Neymar may have kept Fred on the pitch for just 20 minutes longer. Who knows?
Bit of compatriotism there.
Yeah, yeah. National teammates, they can help. And then Neymar went off and span Alex Talis, so it only goes far.
He also grabbed Scott McTominay's nuts, for want of a better word, which I saw at the time, and I thought, did he really just do that? And then Solskjaer mentioned it afterwards and sort of said, you know, our players don't go down like other players. Obviously, it was an issue after the Spurs game, and it sort of suggested that Scott McTominay could have gone down, you know, clutching his nether regions had he so chosen in a particular moment. But I think, probably better that he didn't.
Well. Right, Manchester United do have Premier League action to go. They beat Southampton 3-2 in what was being called as the Luke Shaw / Morgan Schneiderlin derby on Sunday, and now they have to play West Ham on the Saturday in what will be Manchester United's first game in front of a crowd this season. The London Stadium will be open to up to 2,000 football fans. I am trying my hardest to be one of the journalists in the press box there. A quick word on some of the articles we've had come out in the last week. I've done another look at Edinson Cavani and what makes him so special. It tends to be his near post runs and this action I like to call the gamble, where you sort of run towards the goal where someone else is having a shot. So anyone that watched the BT Sport pre-match package before the PSG game, you may have seen Rio Ferdinand describe a little bit of Cavani's movement. I don't want to say he read my article, but I do know that Rio Ferdinand likes my tweets. So I'm not saying that.
Laurie, he's pilfered your stuff, Carl.
He might have done. I'm not saying that. I'm just not saying
that. We can
that.
Say that.
Laurie, I bigged up this piece last week before the final draft arrived, but you've done a phenomenal piece of work on Matt Judge.
Thank you very much.
It's very good. It's got one of the very few photos of Matt Judge that are just out there as well. And I found it... yeah. I found it fascinating.
Surprisingly, United didn't assist with a sort of jovial request for a photo, a proper photo of him. he likes to be, you know, the sort of a low-key executive, and that sort of, you know, comes through in the way that he, you know, communicates and does like a low profile. So yeah, it's a rare thing, a Matt Judge photo.
Yeah, I would recommend to any Manchester United fans who have read the name Matt Judge in a number of articles but don't quite know enough about Matt Judge to bookmark that piece and get it read over this week. And Andy, you've written a piece that I've got bookmarked, so I'm going to get into in a bit, but I'm fascinated by the title. It's called World War III Was Breaking Out, Gary Neville's Tough Tenure at Valencia.
Well, it was tough, and it's 5 years today, I think, since he moved to Valencia, so that moved quickly. I was seeing a lot of Gary when he was there, and I felt sort of compromised as a journalist because I was almost too close to the story. I couldn't write the things that I was seeing. Anas could see him working really hard to learn Spanish. He moved his family to Valencia, really liked it, but he had an almost impossible job. He was being undermined in the local media by former players. He'd walk through the corridors at the training ground and members of staff would go quiet. And yet, after matches, I'd walk from the stadium with him to restaurants, and it was great just to walk through the streets with Valencia's manager, and people like double taking on him, but I could see it was getting really difficult for him. And by the time of that 7-0 defeat in Barcelona, I would have normally expected to meet him for a coffee in the team hotel, and he just messaged me and said, can you pick me up? He didn't want to be there, and we just sat in a street for 4 hours in him like wearing his Valencia tracksuit and people walking past going, that's Gary Neville. And he's just like, and then he said, can we walk to the ground? I went, well, you know, it is 4 kilometres away, and you are the manager of one of the teams. There's going to be 70,000 people there. Can we walk? Yes or no? Like, really bluntly. So I'm thinking, have I got to ring a few mates here for backup in case anyone starts to try and fill Gary Neville in? But we walked to the ground, and it was just a horror night. So it's not a piece I would write before, and it's not one I'll write again, because I'm not close enough to as I was to Gary at that time. He did say to me, next season, why don't you write a book about a season in Valencia? And I thought, this will be brilliant, because I'll get such good access if the manager's granting it, and I'll be able to fly with the team to away matches. And I started looking at properties in Valencia. There were a couple of major problems with this. A, I didn't tell my wife, and B, Gary got sacked.
I think one thing I'm listening from recent episodes is, I just want to say hello to Mrs. Andy Mitten. Just hello. Thank you for all the work that you help so we can put on this podcast.
She's been asleep for a long time now, but when she wakes up in the morning, mate, I will pass on that you're saying hello to her. I'm sure she'll be delighted.
Thank you for teaching us how to say Alex Talese as well. But I think that's it, listener. I think that's all from us. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Talk of the Devils. But other than that, it's goodbye from me, a goodbye from Laurie.
Goodbye, guys. Cheers for listening.
Goodbye from Andy.
Cheers, lads.
And a goodbye from producer Eddie. This has been another episode of Talk of the Devils, a Manchester United podcast brought to you from The Athletic. We'll see you next week.